We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 183. It's the ALDS Game 2 non-challenge recap episode, Scott. This was a heartbreaking, gut-wrenching game. And for everybody out there who is just saying, oh, the Yankees are just, we're just happy to be there. This team overachieved. If you didn't sit there last night and have your guts ripped out, you're not a real fan.
No. You have five runs against, you actually get to Corey Kluber and knock him out of the game. You're up five runs. You got to win that game. I mean, at that point, if anybody's saying I'm happy to be here, you're a lunatic. You're absolutely not emotionally connected, because at that point, the game is yours, and you're walking out of Cleveland beating Corey Kluber 1-1, feeling great.
You have
not so much.
If the Yankees had won this game, and Girardi didn't absolutely take a steaming shit all over the field in Cleveland, the Yankees would have had all of the momentum going back to Yankee Stadium, and that place would have been on absolute fire on Sunday night. Instead, it's going to be a morgue.
No, it'll still be on fire. I still believe that it'll be a big-time atmosphere. That has nothing to do with the price of wheat at this point. The fact of the matter is that when you go that deep into a game and you have that big of a lead and you beat a guy like Corey Kluber, I just don't understand. We were talking about how the reason you brought that up, right? Because people on WFAN, when they call in, first of all, lunatic callers on WFAN all over the place.
There was a lot of them on Friday. I was listening to Francesco. They come out of the woodwork. 3 hours on Friday.
They come out of the woodwork.
Ten callers. I'm just saying, this is such a great season, Mike. It's been so lovely watching all these kids develop. I'm just happy to be here. Cleveland's better than them. It should be 1-1 right now, and instead they're in an 0-2 hole because their manager sucks.
Yeah, it's bad things. They should have won the game. There's no doubt about it. They should have won the game. You have five run. You listen to what Greg Bird was talking about in the post game. He's like, we feel comfortable. That's a game you got to win. But he even said, we felt comfortable with that. You should feel comfortable with that. It's a five run lead. You have the best bullpen in freaking baseball. You should feel comfortable with that. That should be a win every day.
The Yankees did everything right at the start of that game against Corey Kluber. Everything you and I discussed about what they needed to do. Lay off the breaking ball in the dirt.
Yes.
Work the count on Corey Kluber. Make him throw pitches. He's been off for a week, so maybe he'll be rusty. Get to him early. Everything was going to plan. Sanchez with the two-run homer in the first inning. And then Castro gets a huge two-out RBI in the third inning. When it looked like Corey Kluber might be settling in, Castro didn't let him settle in, gets a two-out RBI, and then Hicks with the massive three-run homer stuns the crowd in Cleveland. The Yankees have all of the momentum, and then it just absolutely spiraled out of control. It's like, I don't know what happened in Girardi's mind, but he absolutely puked all over himself in the sixth inning. It was a nightmare scenario.
Would you have a start with Corey Kluber and you get those runs and the dagger, the Hicks home run was freaking a man shot. And Corey Kluber, you could tell, like we were saying, you got to work the count, and if he makes a mistake, you got to take advantage of it. You cannot miss. They didn't. They didn't miss. They took advantage of a lot of the bad pitches because he was definitely leaking over the middle of the plate. Unlike Corey Kluber, the fastball was definitely over the heart of the plate quite a bit. And when you see that, and you have to take advantage of it, and these guys did. They put themselves in a position to win. The players on the field put them in a position to win. And then Girardi sits on his hands.
It's a devastating
I don't know loss. What else. He just sits on his hands. He does nothing.
So the thing with this game is there's so much to unpack here. So much happened in this game.
8 million things happened in this game.
But really, the only thing that matters is that he did not challenge the hit batter on Chisenhall. That is all anybody will be talking about because that was absolutely the turning point in the game. After the sixth inning, none of that happens if he challenges that play. It clearly hit the knob of the bat. That's strike three, end of inning, 8-3 lead for the Yankees going into the seventh inning. Okay, so I know we're going to talk about a ton of different things that happened in this game, a ton of mistakes the Yankees made, but really all it comes down to is that Joe Girardi fucked up and did not challenge that play.
I don't understand this. This has happened throughout the season too, where the replay team or whoever the team is that's actually looking at these videotapes and getting back to him. One, he takes way too much He takes that information in like it's life or death, and it's only that information. Like, he doesn't have two eyes. Like, Gary Sanchez isn't standing and squatting right there after he heard something. He said, I heard something. He immediately yelled, foul, and Girardi does nothing. At that point, you challenge the play. It doesn't matter. If there's inconclusive things, if somebody in the video booth can't see anything, he kept saying that they didn't have information that says that it didn't hit him. That's what he kept saying. We didn't have information that it didn't hit him. Well, guess where the information is that it didn't hit him and that it did hit the bat? From your catcher who's standing on top of the freaking play.
And from Chisenhall. Chisenhall did not react. Chad Green's thrown 97 miles an hour. If you get hit with a 97 mile an hour fastball in the wrist or hand, you're going to be in pain. He didn't even react. Okay, that tells it all right there. So the home plate umpire made a bad call to begin with. But then Sanchez, like you said, yelling at Girardi saying it hit the bat. Girardi needs to look at Chisenhall and say, that guy's not hurt. He didn't get hit. He didn't even fake that he got hit. So you have to challenge the play. And there's sometimes where you have to rely on the guy upstairs in your booth who's looking at it on things like fair or foul, or if it went over the wall or not, or maybe a play at second base or third base when it's farther away from you. But when it's right at home plate and your catcher is standing there yelling, saying it hit the bat, I don't care. You have two challenges in the playoffs. You had nothing to lose by challenging that play and everything to gain. And he didn't do it. He sat on his hands.
Yet he challenges a play where the freaking ball goes through to a cameraman and a cameraman touches it.
Well, at that point, he knew, like, he wasn't going to not challenge another play.
But I'm saying, I mean,
at that point, he knew he was in the wrong.
It looks really dumb when you do something like that where there's a giant gaping hole that the ball is about to go through and the cameraman just reached out and grabbed it so he could throw it back in.
And the excuse after the game made terrible. It that much
worse. It's just, yeah, he doesn't own anything. He just comes up and just says complete nonsense about getting Chad Green out of his rhythm. I don't do it. And then talking about the 30-second rule. Well, it's 30 seconds. It was 30 seconds had gone by, and they like to hear that we're going to challenge within 30 seconds. Nobody said you can't challenge anymore. The umpire didn't come over and said, Joe, you can't do it. He could have absolutely, even after the 30 seconds, come out and said challenge it. No matter what, challenge it. If it's that close, it's such a pivotal point in the game, challenge it anyway. It's a huge spot in the game. It would have been an out and out of the inning.
Yeah. It's a 5-run lead you're taking into the seventh inning with all of the Cleveland fans sitting on their hands because they're devastated that their ace just got pounded, and you're going to go back to Yankee Stadium with all of the momentum. That is what was on the line. And I'm sure Girardi was thinking, I've got Chad Green on the mound. He's been one of my best pitchers all season. He's going to get out of this. But I don't care. It's the playoffs. You can't take any risks.
You know, I think when you're looking at the situation, too, and you realize that the foul tip caught strike three, inning over, that it makes it a very different scenario than even if it was just a not hit by pitch and it was a dead ball or something like that.
Good point.
Because at that point, you're getting out of the inning. You're absolutely done. The inning is over. There's no more questioning it. So why would you not take that chance? It's not a very big risk. You don't know what's going to happen at the rest of the game. You can't sit on that challenge and say, I'm going to use it later in a bigger situation. You can't determine that. At the moment, when you're in a play and it's this massive and you're seeing what's happening with the momentum, you're seeing that there's a lot of runners on base in a pivotal spot, you close the inning.
1,000%. That's a great point. Everything to gain and nothing to lose in that situation. And if he had just... No, I mean, he's still... I think this is a fireable offense. I really do think this. And the parallels between 2007, when Joe Torre didn't pull his team off the field in Game 2 of the ALDS in Cleveland in the bug game, and this with the non-challenge are astounding. Because I really... That got Joe Torre not re-signed. I really think this could get Joe Girardi not re-signed. And the excuse, the arrogance, the freaking pompous nature of Joe Girardi to sit there and lie through his fucking teeth to the media after the game and not just own up and say, yes, I should have challenged it. I made a mistake. Are you really that? Like, what does he have to lose then? Just admit it. Be a man and freaking admit it.
Yeah. It's
I've never been so mad at Joe Girardi.
The excuses that he said, the rhythm, the 30 seconds, they're all just bullshit. It's all a bunch of bullshit. The rhythm is broken from a pitcher at that point anyway. It doesn't matter. There was things that happened. Do you think Chad Green is worried about the rhythm at that point when he can get out of an inning? No.
It's insane. It's I'm at a loss of words because it is such a devastating loss. I know that the Yankees are overmatched with Cleveland. Cleveland is maybe the best team in baseball. They're probably the favorites to win the World Series. That does not matter. All that matters is that the Yankees were staring down a 1-1 series going back home, and now they're in an 0-2 hole.
See, the problem, but the problem with what you're saying is you're saying they're overmatched. We're looking at what them on paper. We're seeing the 22 game win streak. We're seeing all these things and overmatched. I'm looking at my I'm using my eyes to watch this team. And on Monday, Trevor Bauer came out and whooped their ass. There's no doubt about it. He came out and not Monday, whatever the first game came out and whooped their ass. The dude pitched phenomenally. Tip your hat. Good job. But what they did is they came back and they made all the right adjustments. Like a veteran team, like a team who's been there before, made all the right adjustments and got to Corey Kluber, probably the best pitcher in major leagues, definitely the AL, probably the Cy Young winner. And they made those adjustments to come out there and came out hot. So you're saying overmatched, but I'm looking at this team. We know the talent's there. I don't think we have less talent than the Cleveland Indians. Are they a more cohesive unit because of what they've done and the players that they've been there before in the postseason? Maybe, but guess what? This team, the New York Yankees, they're learning pretty damn quickly. They're a team on the rise that gets things pretty fast. And I don't see a team overmatched right now. I don't. I just see a team that got caught with their pants down, basically. Chad Green made a bad pitch, and Cleveland took the momentum and took advantage of it. No doubt about it. They struck when the opportunity was there, and the Yankees didn't.
Yeah, let's also talk about Chad Green, because he was bad for the first time in a long, long time, potentially bad for the first time all season. He couldn't get guys out. He could not put both Gomes and Chisenhall away with two strikes. So that's also on Chad Green.
At the end of the day, people on the field are making mistakes as well. I mean, granted, we know that Joe Girardi didn't challenge that ball. At the same time, Francisco Lindor hit a Chad Green, looked like a breaking ball down in the zone, didn't get down enough, and he just took it out.
Oh, so yeah, that was a bad pitch.
Chad Green was not sharp. There's no doubt he was not sharp. Whether that's a byproduct of what happened from the wild card game, I don't know. Very well could be. Who knows? But at the same time, he wasn't sharp, and the players on the field, at the end, when you have a 5-run lead like that, you got to close the game out no matter what. I mean, that's on the players as well. There's a lot of responsibility on the players, totally. But when you have a guy at the helm making the decisions that are basically swinging momentum, I mean, Joe Girardi didn't hit that grand slam. Francisco Lindor did. Joe Girardi didn't throw that pitch. Chad Green did. But he put them in that position.
Does Girardi lose his job for this?
I don't think so. I think they had already decided that Girardi's going to stay, personally.
Well,
but you know, maybe this throws a wrench. I mean, honestly, if it was the big man, yeah, he's gone.
Going back to New York. Pena is managing Game 3 if Steinbrenner was still alive.
Right, right. But the kid Steinbrenners, they don't have that impulse reaction usually. It seems like they think about things a little bit more and take a broader stance on different situations. So I still think he was coming back no matter what. But yeah, I mean, you could look at it and you could absolutely circle this and say, you know, you don't have the pulse of what's going on. At that point, this is such a problem to me. Like when you're bringing in all these like metrics and you're taking technology and the replay and you're waiting on other people, you lose the feel for the game. You lose the what's happening right in front of you. Whereas, you know, a lot of times you see something and you react, right? But now he's like, oh, well, maybe I got it. He overthinks it. And the technology, it's like a kid with ADD. You put too many damn things around him and he can't focus on one thing. And that's what's happening with Girardi. Like, he's got too many things to think about and he's failing to use the baseball intuition that's actually in his brain. And it drives me insane.
He had such a good game on Tuesday night in the wild card game. He had the pulse of his team. He took Severino out in the first inning and brings in Chad Green. That move paid off. Then he leaves David Robertson out there for 52 pitches, and that move paid off because he felt the pulse of the team and David Robertson was rolling. He made all of the right moves in the wild card game. And as good as that game was managed, game two of the division series was managed that poorly. And I think, can't overstate the fact that this is Girardi's job was not in question. If they just went out there and got dominated by Corey Kluber in game two, like they got dominated in game one by Trevor Bauer, you kind of say you can tip your hat to the Cleveland Indians in that situation. And if they get beat because Cleveland's better, fine. But like you said, this is a game the Yankees had won. They should have won it, and they didn't. And that is why it's a fireable offense, because it's squarely on that pivotal play in the sixth inning that Girardi screwed up. And that's why it is so gut-wrenching, and that's why now his job is in question. His job was not in question before game two. Now it is. I'm probably leaning towards what you're saying, and that the Steinbrenners are not going to overreact and fire him. But if they did, I sure as shit would not be too upset about it, because that's how pissed off I am about this one thing.
Well, I think that you and I have always been, if Girardi were to ever get canned at any of these points, we're like, okay, you know. I've never had like.
But we're fair. We're fair to Girardi more than a lot of Yankee fans, I think, because a lot of people kill him for absolutely everything. And I think we are pretty fair with Girardi when he makes stupid moves and when he makes good moves.
Well, and the biggest difference when you're looking at what happened at the wild card game, and then you see what happened last night, and it's the same thing. Like, he actually was using his gut. He saw with his own two eyes that Severino was struggling, and he didn't have it. And he said, you know what? Before this gets any worse, I'm pulling him right now, because that's the right move, because I'm watching what he's doing. I'm seeing the body language. That's the right move. When he left David Robertson in, when he went to Chad Green, brought him back out for it, he even pulled Chad Green in that wild card game when he looked like he was ready to come out. It was all the right moves, because he was reading the players that he's seen all year long. He trusted those guys. At what point do you stop trusting your catcher that has been out there all the time? And by the way, I got to say this. Gary Sanchez did a very nice job blocking balls last night too. A very nice job, because there were a lot of balls in the dirt that David Robertson and some of the other guys had to bury. And Gary Sanchez buried the ball. He did exactly what you do. You deaden it. I have to say that, because I've been so critical of him. I think he did a very good job. That being said, why are you not trusting your guy at that point? Why are you not trusting your guy that says, hey, foul ball. I think foul ball is what he said in the post game. So he's telling you that he says it. He heard something. You don't hear the hand. You don't hear it hit the hand or graze the glove. Because that's what he was saying. The umpire was basically saying that it grazed the glove. Probably didn't feel it because it grazed. There's not a lot of room, not a lot of slack in a batting glove. I'm sorry. Not a lot of room.
Just look at Chisenhall. You feel it. Just look at Chisenhall. He stood it in the batter's box because he didn't think he got hit. That says it all. The batter and the catcher will tell you everything you need to know about the situation. And we've seen Derek Jeter fake get hit before. He acted the shit out of it. Chisenhall didn't do that. And Girardi was, like you said, that's a great point, like what you said earlier. He's more worried about what the replay official on the Yankees is going to say than what
who the hell is this guy? Who is this replay official? Show yourself. Show yourself.
It's just a robot. It's a robot.
Yeah, I want to know. Does it actually exist, or is it a robot? It might be. It might be a robot.
It's Siri. It's Siri on Girardi's iPhone. That's what their replay guy is.
But the other thing, you and I were talking about this too, about before we started recording, about CeCe. Right, so this is the other thing when you're talking about the wild card game, where Joe had the pulse of the team. He had the guys under his wing that he's been managing all year long. He understood, because he felt the momentum of the game, the way that they were throwing. He could just tell that intuition, that manager's intuition that comes with seeing a guy pitch over and over and over and knowing their signs. And when you have a guy like CeCe Sabathia, who got in trouble early, which has happened all year, we've seen him get in trouble a little bit early and then settle in. It's happened a lot. You see him settle in. I think he retired like, what, 12 of 13 or something like that by the time
11 of 12 he gave up the Kipnis hit that made it 3-2 Cleveland, and then retired 11 of 12 batters.
So there was an out before the walk in the sixth inning at that point, right? So you go in out. And you're pulling him. He's at 80 pitches. There hasn't been a lot of hard contact all day. A 5-run lead, a guy that feels good, a gamer, a guy that's 9-0. I said 8-0 on yesterday's show. Sorry, 9-0 when your back is to the wall after a Yankees loss. Guy feeling good, all the momentum in the world on his side. He knows he games up for these particular games in the playoffs. Ride your guy. Feel that situation. So, big man, how do you feel? Do you feel good? I feel great, Joe. Let's go. He's the guy. You got to listen to your man at that point.
I understand what you're saying, and that is a second guess on Girardi, but I agreed with pulling Sabathia. Don't push it. When you have a rested, everybody in the bullpen was rested. All of the big guns were rested from Tuesday night. They didn't pitch for 2 days. Chad Green didn't pitch for 2 days. Robertson, Canely, and Chapman. With a 5-run lead, Girardi was saying, I got to get to those guys. Let's ice this game. So I understand what you're saying, and it was clearly the wrong move to pull CeCe, but at the time, I agreed with it. Shit, I was on the Bronx Pinstripes Twitter account in the third inning saying to start Chad Green in the third inning because I didn't think Sabathia had it. So you're right. Sabathia didn't give up hard contact, but he was wild. He hit.
Yeah, but that's what he is. We know that. That's his new pitching.
Right, but I didn't want to push the envelope when he walked two batters and hit a guy. And yes, I know the defense let him down. Todd Frazier made two errors, but Sabathia was also wild.
But at the same time,
I didn't want to give Cleveland anything to work with.
In the sixth inning.
Yeah, of course. Like, shit.
In the sixth inning, you get a guy out. You walk a guy. And you're still riding. You're still only at 80 pitches. That's to me one of the keys. Like, he wasn't working hard. The guy had plenty of bullets in him. It's not at a point where you're like, okay, I'm pushing my limit. You're not even close to pushing your limit yet. That's my thing. Like, you read the situation, Joe. Look at your guy. He's not laboring. Walks are part of CeCe Sabathia's game now. You have to live with them because he is nibbling at corners. He's throwing a ton of breaking balls, and he's making guys swing out of the zone. So walks are going to happen. You got to have the faith at that point when it's clear that he's not laboring or not struggling, but maybe that was just part of his game plan. If I don't see it, if I get it to a certain count, I'm going to throw this pitch. If he doesn't swing, I'm going to walk him. I'll go after the next guy. That's part of his game now.
Yeah, and the bottom of the lineup was coming up too. So Gomes was coming up, and then, well, they ended up pinch hitting Chisenhall, but I don't know what they would have done had Sabathia still been in there. But yeah, it was the bottom of the lineup. It's not like they had Ramirez and their big guns coming up. Like I said,
I understand
it's
we're a Monday morning quarterback.
It's a fair second guess. Right. We are Monday morning quarterbacking that pulling of CeCe. It's a fair second guess, though. I don't blame Girardi for doing what he did in that situation. Everything that went wrong happened after Chad Green came in the game.
I think when you're watching the game live, and a lot of people who are making instant reactions at that point, one, I think a lot of people are on board with you in the sense that, like, hey, let's pull him early when he didn't have it. But at the same time, I feel like it was pretty split at that moment. When you're in the game and you're not Monday morning quarterbacking and you're looking at the situation, I'm looking at him like, look, CeCe's still there. This is my guy. You have him out there in freaking game two of the AL, of the ALDS on the road. Like, you're trusting him to go do that at that point. So, like, all of a sudden your trust is gone with 80 pitches?
No, it's not trust gone. It's...
There is. No, that's, used, a, that's
no,
part
so
of it.
So he used his gut, and his gut was wrong in that situation. Or did he not use his gut? Did he say
no, he didn't use his
77
gut.
Pitch? He
didn't use his gut. Let me tell you why. Let me tell you why. Because I listened to the post game and he described exactly the situation and what
he
had.
He said,
we usually go with, this is what we've been doing all year. So what does that lead you to believe? Chapter 4.3 of the binder. In this particular case, when you get around 90 pitches for CeCe Sabathia, Chad Green comes in if he's available. And that's exactly what he did. He defaulted to what is just, he's done all year.
What has worked all year.
Well, no, but he didn't read the situation.
But Scott, that worked all year for Sabathia. The reason Sabathia had a successful season this year is because Girardi did not push him too far. He knew if it's the fifth or the sixth inning and Sabathia is in trouble, let's go to our bullpen. That's how Sabathia is going to be.
He wasn't in trouble. That's my point. My point is he wasn't in trouble. It was the hook came too early because he was not in trouble. He was not laboring. The walks were spread out, but again, like I've said, it's part of his game plan. He's admitted this. He's talked about this. Yeah, I'm going to walk more guys because I can't go out there and challenge people with a fastball anymore. It's just not my game anymore. So yes, you're going to get walks. It wasn't that's my point. He read the situation wrong in the sense that it was too early because CeCe wasn't ready to come out. All these other times, there are times in the fifth inning and in the sixth inning where he's ready to come out and Joe goes to Chad Green. Totally get it. Not this time. He wasn't ready to come out.
Well, then Sabathia, when Girardi walks out there, needs to really make it a point and say, I'm staying in this game. Sabathia, it's probably would have still been taken out, but Sabathia is at the point in his career, the point on this Yankees team where he can at least tell Girardi, I think you're making a mistake here. I still have it.
Yeah, I think at that point it doesn't matter.
But
you don't want to show up your manager on the mound either in a situation like that.
And it's a, and what Sabathia is,
especially as one of the leaders.
And what Sabathia is thinking and what everyone at home was thinking, I know I was thinking this, is that Chad Green's coming in. We got this. He's going to blow these guys away.
At the end of the day, the move still should have worked, right? It still should have worked. Chad Green normally comes in and does the job. I'm looking at this and just analyzing the move, and I like CeCe in that situation. I like my big vet guy who goes out there big game. Give Chad Green the seventh, maybe even the eighth, or you go 7-8. Then you're set up 7-8-9 with Green, Robertson, Chapman, game over.
But if you're still set up in that situation where if Chad Green gets the last two outs of the sixth inning, you've got Canely, Robertson, Chapman, or Green for the seventh inning and then Robertson, Chapman, or Chapman for a two-out save, which Chapman pitched two innings anyway. So, all right, let's move on to the rest of this game. It doesn't matter. It didn't work.
Yeah, we could talk about this all day. The fact that it didn't work, and it should have. There's no doubt. I don't hold Girardi responsible for that move, in all honesty. When you're looking at it, it's not the move I would have made. I still don't think he had the pulse of it. But at the same time, it should have worked.
Yeah. Let's move on to the rest of this game. And I know people are saying, I don't care about the rest of this game because all I care about is that Girardi screwed up the replay. But so much else happened in this game. First of all, the Yankees were sloppy. They were lucky to be up 8-3 because they were making mistakes against Cleveland. Todd Frazier made two errors. CeCe pitched around them for the most part. They left so many guys on base late in that game, the 9th, 10th, and 11th inning, did not score them. Tereas get pinch running and getting picked off second base. Are you kidding me? Tereas, you are on this team for one reason and one reason only in the playoffs, and that is to pinch run and then go in and play defense. And you screwed up.
It's a bad move. We've been praising Tereas all year long because he's been phenomenal. At that particular moment, it was a bad job. A bad job. You cannot be getting that far off. Gardner's going to get that bunt down. He's trying to bunt to third base. There's not going to be anybody there to even go for the out anyway. If he pushes the bunt down, you're good. I understand he was trying to get an aggressive lead just in case the bunt was pushed to the pitcher. Situations happen at that point. You're trying to go to third. Fine. But at the same time, you got to know damn well, 100%, that you can get back. There's no doubt. Gomes has one of the better arms in the league. You know he's going to throw down. He's done it before. I think he was throwing guys out at like a 38% clip. So him and Sanchez probably have the two best arms in the league. They're up there, if not the best. You know the guy's got a hose and he's got a quick trigger, so he's going to throw. You can't be that aggressive.
That's a young... Tereas is still young. We forget that Tereas is like 24 years old. That's a young, inexperienced player showing through. Because when you are pinch running in the playoffs, you need to be smart on the bases. And he was stupid in that situation. And it cost them. And who knows what the Yankees would have done. But they were staring down the barrel of Tereas on third base with one out and Aaron Judge coming up. And instead, more momentum to the Cleveland side. The Yankees had 1% of momentum at that time, and then it was 0% after that. Because Josh Tomlin and his 4.98 ERA comes in and gets him 1-2-3, 1-2-3. All the guy does is throw strikes. He doesn't have good stuff. How about you swing the bat? Aaron Hicks was looking at pitches like, what the hell are you doing against Josh Tomlin? Swing the damn bat.
Yeah, there's a guy that named Josh Tomlin who comes in and shuts two shutout innings in extras is not something that you can expect. Yeah, you got to be when you have a guy that has a higher ERA like that and is around the plate, you got to be aggressive. You got to go after him because obviously he pitches to contact, and a lot of times the contact is successful contact by the offense. So go after him.
Like I said earlier, Chapman pitched two good innings in this game. Would you have used Chapman in the 8th and 9th inning for a two-out save instead of extending Robertson again?
Yeah, 100%. This is the thing that, again, this is another situation where Girardi didn't feel what was happening in the game. After what David Robertson did on Tuesday night, pitching, 52 pitches, three innings, Why are you trying to push him to another? I mean, that was his third inning pitching, right? He got out of the sixth. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you're sitting twice. That's to me the biggest thing.
That's
you're
the sitting thing. Twice. It wasn't the amount of pitches or the outs he got. It was, again, sitting twice. He sat after the sixth inning and after the seventh inning.
So he's coming back in again. You're going and extending him far beyond. Like, look, the guy gamed up on Tuesday night. That's not what you need to. He's not that guy to do it every single time. That's not what he is. He can do it. Obviously, he showed that. But you don't overuse that. You don't say, oh, this guy did it on Tuesday night. He could do it again now. 2 days later, 3 days later. No, that's not what he is. He's been a freaking setup one inning guy, closer his entire career. Why do you think that all of a sudden, twice in 1 week, he can pitch in three innings, back-to-back outings? It's just, to me, it's not the right move. You see Chapman that's blowing people away, one-run game? Bring your closer in. Get six outs. He can do it. The guy has been freaking lights out over the past month. Bring your closer in. It was a bad move. And you know what? David Robertson, to his credit, was pitching pretty damn well. He had that freaking curveball looking filthy. He was making people look stupid. And Jay Bruce hit a fastball, up and away fastball, and he just put a good swing on it and put it away. He went with the pitch. It was a freaking good hit, too.
Yeah, Jay Bruce was leading off the inning, so that's even more of a reason. So Robertson, like we said, you're pushing your luck with Robertson as you keep throwing him out there for these multiple innings. I wouldn't have done this, but another option would have been to bring in Jaime Garcia or somebody to face just Jay Bruce as the lefty. Jaime Garcia actually had a good at-bat in game one against Jay Bruce. He got him to fly out to center field. But I would have probably just gone to Chapman, lefty on lefty with Jay Bruce, let Chapman get his two-out save.
At that particular situation, when you have an out or when you have a one-run lead in the eighth inning, after what happened, after the debacle, the grand slam, don't you have to put your best foot forward at that point and make damn sure that you put your best guys in the best situations to succeed?
Well, Robertson is one of their best guys. He just didn't put him in the best spot to succeed.
And that's what I'm talking about. There's an equation there. It's not just your best guy. It's your best guy in the best situation. And that's the manager's job. The manager puts guys in situations. And if he puts them in a situation to basically fail at that point, I mean, you're looking at you're running him out there for a third inning for the second consecutive outing. That's not something he does. Like, that's not something he does. Bring your closer out. It's a one-run game. Bring your closer out.
But you know Robertson. Robertson was probably in the dugout saying, yes, keep giving me the ball.
He didn't listen to CeCe in the freaking fifth when he's 80 pitches deep, when he's controlling the game. But he's going to say David Robertson, who, of course, every player out there is going to say, I'm good. I understand that. But you're pushing, you know what his limitations are. You know what he's done all year. You know what he's done his entire career. Why are we going to try to stretch that twice in 1 week? Why? What's the point when you have a Chapman back there? And if Tommy Canley's been pitching well, why?
He pushed every wrong button.
Every single wrong button. Against Jay Bruce, who has proved that he can hit the ball out of the ballpark in big situations.
Girardi was cutting the wires on the bomb, trying to cut the red, green, or blue wire, and every time he just cut the wrong wire, and it blew up in his face. Unbelievable. Yeah,
and he was wearing a flak jacket, and nobody else was. Everybody else got affected.
we're being hit with shrapnel over here.
Yeah.
Betances comes in after Chapman and pitches well in the 11th and the 12th inning. He faced all lefties. I think that's important to say. He faced all lefties and got them out six in a row. Comes out for the 13th inning facing a righty in Austin Jackson and looks more wild. Walks Austin Jackson, and now obviously we know what happened. The Yankees lose the game on a hit down the left field line. Betances has not pitched three innings all year, but at that point in the game, your choices are between Betances or Warren, who pitched a lot on Monday, or Jordan Montgomery, who is a rookie coming into an extra inning game. I'm sure if Betances got through the 13th inning, then we would have seen Montgomery come out. But And that
situation. Who knows? Batista's might have come out for a fourth inning of the way Joe was going.
Yeah. Girardi was like, hey, he was a starter back in 2010 in Scranton. Yeah. So why
zero,
not put
zero
him up
control
there?
Issues. I mean, you got through two innings without control issues. Let's go out for a third one. Maybe we can run into some control issues and really get him back on that schneid. I mean, come on.
I'm not blaming Betances because he got six
I'm not blaming Betances. Yeah, there's no doubt. Again, put guys in situations where you can succeed. Honestly, I do think at that point when you're going extra innings, you have a guy like Jordan Montgomery who's not there to start games, right? That let's think about that. He's not there to start games. He's actually there for situations exactly like this. You have an extra inning game and
you would have started him in the 13th.
Yeah, absolutely. Why are you trying to push guys that are not Betances has been downright terrible over the past month. Terrible. You get a good outing from him yesterday in a situation that was, you know, pretty low pressure. And then you bring it back in. He pitches two great innings. Why are you going to roll the dice on a guy who's been very shaky, who then, you know there's a walk around the corner at any second. And the other thing is, if there's a walk around the corner, there's a stolen base around the corner.
Yeah. Yep.
So you got to consider that. You have to consider that. If you walk a guy with Betances, runner in scoring position. You got to consider that. So yeah, at that point, I think Jordan Montgomery is a guy that you have to look at, no doubt. I don't care if he's a rookie. He's not a rookie anymore. He played a whole season.
So you would fire Girardi. If you were the owner, you would fire Girardi because not only did he not challenge the play, he took CC out too soon. Then he left David Robertson out there too long. Then he left Dylan Betances out there too long. This is so many wrong moves. You would fire him.
I'm not an impulsive guy in that sense, so I'm not looking at just one game. Granted, it's the highest leverage situation you could possibly have. You played the entire year for this game, and you beat Corey Kluber. Maybe I would fire his ass.
Scott, we're not. I am not overreacting. This is the worst loss in Joe Girardi's managerial tenure of the Yankees. Absolute worst loss. Worst managed game. Worst loss.
You're probably right. It was a terrible, 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 terrible game for him. And there were guys doing things that the guys shouldn't be doing, situations they shouldn't have been in, guys being taken out of situations they should be in. Every single decision was the wrong decision. Playing Ellsbury, wrong decision. Just a million wrong decisions.
Game 3, Sunday night. Woo!
I'm still good. You're not. I'm still good.
No, I'm not good. I don't know how you could be good after that.
Because I'm just going, look, it's the old cliche, one game at a time.
No, my motto right now is don't get swept.
One game at a time. Tanaka's going to come out, dominate. A little bit of momentum is going to come back. No problem. Take game 3. If you win game 3, you can win game 4. And okay, now you go to game 4 with momentum at home. Stadium's rocking. You win that game, right? You could do that. That's not out of the question. They played phenomenal at home. Then you go against Corey Kluber back in Cleveland against a guy that you know you can hit. It's not the worst situation in the entire world. Could be worse. I don't know how much it could be worse, but it could be worse.
I don't know how, sitting here Saturday morning, how it could be any worse than last night.
Because right now, what we're looking at for the next two games, you're looking at a home field advantage, which we know has impacted this team. We know we have it. The Yankees have a home field advantage. We've both acknowledged that. Tanaka pitches a lot better at home. Tanaka is that guy who can shut a team down. You get a good start from Tanaka. Then you got Severino, the guy that's been phenomenal all year long, had a little blip on the radar, wants to prove himself, coming back. Your ace is coming back on in game 4. I like the odds. Honestly, for the next two games, I like our chances in these next two games. You win with Tanaka. If Tanaka has a good start, this team is not dead. 100% not dead.
Tanaka has to have a good start also because I want to see Severino get back out there. I would be very, very disappointed and very worried for Severino going forward if he does not get another chance to pitch in the playoffs because he's going to be sitting on that wild card game, third of an inning start all year. And we still think he's our ace going forward. 2018 playoffs, we expect the Yankees to be there. We expect Luis Severino to be on the mound. So he's going to be sitting on that for a long time if he doesn't get a chance to go back out there and show that he's not a little bitch and can actually pitch in the playoffs. It's been a bad playoffs for aces.
Right. Everybody. Yeah.
Kluber sucked. Sale sucked. Severino sucked. I mean, it's just all these aces getting pounded.
Yeah. It's been a bad look across baseball. There's a Greinke got hit. They're all over. These guys have gotten hit. But think about this. I'm going to get you back on the wagon here. You're down 0-2, right? That's terrible. You lose the two away.
Hold on, let me check. Carry the one. Yep. Yeah, it's terrible. The worst case situation right now. Down 0-2. Okay.
Not the worst case situation, because what's happening now? Usually in a situation when you're down 0-2, you've thrown your two best pitchers, right? Done. Out the window, gone. You're looking at your 3 and 4 starter. Maybe your 1 is coming back on short rest for the game 4 to salvage. Maybe that's happening. But what's happening now is that the Yankees are going on Sunday with Tanaka, the guy that's been phenomenal in the second half, can go out there and dominate a team. You know that. We've seen it happen. He's done it a bunch of times. 15 strikeouts. Remember that. 15
good
strikeouts.
Good home splits, too.
Good home splits. So this is a guy that you know damn well can go out there and pitch a very good game. Going against Carrasco. Carrasco is good. There's no doubt about it, but he's much better at home, right? Much better at home.
No, Carrasco's actually
much better on the road. My
much
bad.
Better on the road.
Don't worry about that. Forget about that. That doesn't mean shit in Yankee Stadium. So you got Tanaka on Sunday, right? You could absolutely win that game. There's no doubt about it. Then you have your ace in game 4. Oh, so we didn't throw our best two pitchers in the first two games? No, we have our best two pitchers coming up at home.
Yeah, and
that. That's you're looking at a best case scenario down 0-2. That's what you got.
And if you do get it to a game 4, you've got Severino likely going up against Danny Salazar or maybe Trevor Bauer on short rest.
Yeah. So I really do like our chances in these next two games, honestly. I think this is, again,
It's one game at a time, like you said. And
it is one game at a time. But their backs were against the wall yesterday, the offense I'm talking about now. And they came out and delivered, right? The offense delivered.
The offense did everything and more against Corey Kluber.
Right.
Like, the game plan to a T against Corey Kluber. That was a phenomenal job by the offense to knock Corey Kluber. 38 pitches in the first inning. Gary Sanchez takes an outside slider and just barrels it up and takes it to center field. Doesn't try and overswing. Aaron Judge is even laying off some sliders from Corey Kluber. It was,
it was the prototypical
game plan against Corey Kluber, and they executed it. That's why this is so painful, because they did everything they needed to do. 8-3 ball game in the sixth inning when Corey Kluber started. Come on.
Okay, moving on. Game.
I'm
game
not.
Three.
No, dude. I tweeted out this morning that I'm not going to get over this loss until the Yankees win a World Series.
Okay. Well, if they can, Jesus Christ, if they can win, I'm telling you, if they win tomorrow, it's a different series. If Tanaka could go out there and throw 7 innings, which I could see happening, I could see Tanaka doing this. There's no doubt about it. Tanaka has it in him. He has the ability of anybody. He has the ability to shut down a roster like this, especially with the way the pitches that he throws. If he gets that sinker down, if he gets the late action moving down like he did in Toronto, I'm telling you, this is a team that can pull the momentum right back. If you win 2 games in the Bronx, you can go back to Cleveland, and then all the pressure is on Cleveland, all of it.
Yeah, don't get swept.
You know there's a glimmer of hope.
All right. So that's going to do it for this episode, the painful podcast. I don't feel any better. Do you feel any better, Scott, now that we have
Yes, I do.
All
I feel amazing. I feel great because they're going to win these next 2 games. They're going to win these next 2 games. Tanaka's going to go out and dominate. Watch it. Mark my words. Tanaka's going to go out and dominate. They're going to put up a 5 spot early on Carrasco. I don't give a shit about his splits. They're going to go out there and the offense is going to dominate. Yankee Stadium is going to be freaking on fire. They're going to win the game, and then they're going to go out game 4, and Severino is going to be like, I'm sorry, I totally fucked up the first one. My bad. And then just dominate. And they're going to get to a game 5. That's what's going to happen. That's exactly what's going to happen.
All right, guys. Well, we will be doing another podcast. It'll be out on Monday morning after the Sunday night game. Hopefully, Scott's right, and hopefully Tanaka dominates. Enjoy the game, and hopefully, let's be loud in the Bronx. I said it's going to be a morgue. Don't prove me right. Prove me wrong, and make it loud in the Bronx. Get behind this team. We still love this team. All right, that's all I got. Talk to you guys on Monday.
Believe it or not, George isn't at home. Please leave a message at the beep.
I must be out, or I pick up the phone.
Where could I be? Believe it or not, I'm not home.
Christ, Sonny Gray, learn to throw some fucking strikes. Holy shit, you can't be walking people. Like, this is the playoffs. the best team in the AL. Like, you can't be doing this. And also, both of you, stop predicting how far our pitchers are going to go. The last few times you have, they haven't made predictions. Just stop predicting these things, please. For the love of God, please, just stop predicting anything. You're jinxing us. Come on.
Yo, it's Michael in Nashville, guys. I'm really distraught after this game. I'll tell you right now, if I see the Yankees watch a fastball go down the middle of the plate again without a swing, I'm going to drive up to New York myself and slap the first Yankee player I see. I don't care if it's a current player like Judge, who missed seven of them as he saw them going down the plate, or if it's a former player like Mattingly. The first Yankee player I see, I'm slapping him in the face. I can't handle it. They've got to stop laying off those pitches that are fastballs, and because they were getting nothing but curveballs all night long. They should have known that from the get-go and just sat on fastballs, because they're only going to get one, maybe two per at-bat. It was disgusting.
Two-run homer off Kluber. Let's go. Greg from Florida says, let's do this. We're going back to Yankee Stadium. 1-1.
Yep, so game two, Yankees up 2-0, bottom of the first. CeCe just walked a guy, and we got Edwin up. But can we just pause? Like, I'm literally going to pause the game. Pause the game right now. Can we talk about Boston being down one game and being down 8-1 right now? I love that. But anyway, game for Yanks.
Aaron fucking Hicks, baby! Let's go!
Yo, this thing's crazy!
Let's go Yankees, baby!
Will be going crazy on Sunday at the game. Mark my words, I will not stop at one moment.
Hey, this is Andre from Austin, Texas. I'm just watching the game right now. I don't have enough words to describe what CeCe is doing. He's been the stopper. He's been the best pitcher in the Yankees for the whole season. He's such a beast. And what about Barrett and Hicks and El Gatti with all those home runs? Let's go Yankees.
Joe Girardi is a fucking idiot. I cannot believe he didn't review that play. Instead of being out of the inning, now they are just 8-7 because the fucker wouldn't review the play. Listen to your teammate. How many times have we seen during the year where Joe Girardi could have reviewed it without losing anything, yet he doesn't? Oh my fucking God, we lose this game.
What's up, guys? In the words of Jerry Seinfeld, I am speechless. I am without speech.
Hey, Ben Stryver, this is Eric from Syracuse. What a brutal fucking game that was. You thought 8 runs would be enough, but apparently the offense did too, because they just went to sleep after the 6th inning, but it should have been enough, but you gotta take into account the Girardi factor. Let's see, let's just run down the moron checklist here. After CC is dealing, he takes him out too early. Then, he doesn't challenge the pretty obvious not-hit batsman call, and I don't know what the fuck the miscommunication they're talking about was. Just challenge this damn thing. You have nothing to lose. And then in the 8th inning, you bring out Robertson, who's thrown 100 pitches in the last 3 days, instead of a more rested McCaffrey, who I guess didn't pitch good enough last night to meet your expectations, you motherfucker. And then, let's see what else. I think that's all I can help with now. But Joe overmanaged once to a loss once again. Fuck you, Joe. It's Cashman. Doesn't fire from the offseason, I don't know what to say. See ya.
Joe.
Yeah, first of all, a couple of things here. Let's just get past Girardi not challenging that ball is off the bat. It's an 8-7 game. Act like you're still fucking in the game, dude. I mean, the player's looking up to you for leadership, and you're walking around like you already fucking lost. Every time the camera went on Girardi, looks like he fucking lost the game. And Todd Frazier. I'm a Todd Frazier fan. But you don't get to fucking throw a Gatorade cup. You haven't earned the right to throw a fucking Gatorade cup. Yeah, Terrain's fucked up. What are you bet, like 200? You've been on the team for 2 months? Act like a professional.
Joe fucking Girardi, you are a fucking clown. You cost us the division this year. All this fucking bullshit about you being a great bullpen management. No, you just got a great fucking bullpen. You suck. I hope they don't resign you. If George was here, you would have fucking been here years ago. Fuck you, Girardi.
So I've been puking since, Girardi didn't, you know, challenge that call before the grand slam.
My wife is crying tonight because Yankees lost. I'm not a huge Yankees fan myself, but strongly believe Girardi needs to be fired because it's affecting my marriage here.
Holy fuck! Wasn't really able to watch it in the game. Sat my own game myself. Get an update from my buddy Dad. It's 8-3, and the fucking bullpen blows it. Okay, offense can't fucking bailing us out every goddamn time. We need lockdown innings for God's sake. Oh my god! We need fucking pick this stuff. All right, we need to get something going on Sunday. Peace.
Girardi, you better dust your resume off, because after that pathetic, lethargic excuse for a managing job, you are done. You were on the case before, and now you just put the final nail in the coffin, you piece of shit. Get the fuck out of New York.
I'm so fucking mad right now, I can't even be loud or anything. Yeah. What type of lame-ass fucking excuse was that when, Joe Girardi said he didn't want to break his pitcher's rhythm? You fucking broke CC Sabathia's fucking rhythm, and he was pitching a somewhat of a gem in Cleveland. You fucking idiot. If Hal has any fucking sanity or any type of judgment left in his fucking brain, he'll shred any fucking extension papers he has for Joe Girardi and start looking for a new manager today. Tonight. Like, he should be calling people tonight. The shit show Joe. The Joe shit show. Whatever fucking show you wanna fucking call this Joe Girardi fucking circus clown. This shit's over. Fucking over.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.